You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside of the minds and lives of some of Canada, indeed the world's top leaders. Some of the people we've sat down have included Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar El Gabra, Canada's Minister of Transport, who happens to be in Montreal today. Great to have you with us, Omar. Tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family do?
First of all, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity. I was born in Saudi Arabia of Syrian parents. My dad was a Syrian expat working in Saudi. He went there in the late 60s and was working part of the oil boom at that time in construction and development. I grew up, I spent my childhood in Saudi, visiting Syria regularly during summer vacations and stuff. And then I moved back to Syria for a couple of years. So I finished high school in Saudi. I did a couple of years of university in Syria, and then I came to Canada as a student.
So what did you study and where did you study here in Canada?
I studied mechanical engineering at Ryerson University, and then I did my Master's of Business Administration at York University.
I studied at Ryerson when I was in high school, and I did my PhD at Schulich. So it's
go.
A small world.
We have
when
a lot
did
of
you finish your MBA? I didn't teach you, did I?
No, I don't think so. I finished it in 2000.
Okay, I finished in 95, so I just missed you by a couple years there. What was your first job out of university?
It was with Ainsworth Electric, a mid-size, at that time it was a $100 million contractor. I don't know what their volume is now because they've been acquired by another company. I worked in their motor shop repairing electric motors. So my first year there was working on the floor, dismantling motors, sandblasting parts, painting equipment. It was really a lot of fun and tremendous experience. And then after that, I moved to their quality assurance department and I became the quality assurance supervisor where I implemented ISO 9002. I don't think anybody talks about ISO 9000 anymore, but and then I moved on to do sales and that all within Ainsworth. So I spent there about 4 years.
We're speaking with Canada's Minister of Transport, Omar El Gabra. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. You studied engineering, and I interview a lot of engineers or people at McKinsey in various places. Does that affect your thinking today, do you believe, the engineering degree from Ryerson?
Totally. Absolutely. It does. I've been, because of my education, my brain has been wired to troubleshoot differently than maybe lawyers and teachers and educators. Not that I'm saying it's better or worse, but it's wired differently. I also am always looking to understand the principles behind how things work. So I think it's because of my engineering background.
I love the fact you start on the floor because it makes you more of just the average Canadian. Like you work on the floor with the other men and women and you're just one of us.
Well, my first job during university was at a donut shop during the midnight shift. And when people tell me, "Oh, you studied engineering, you studied business, what did you learn about politics?" I tell them I did the midnight shift at a donut shop, and that's the best political course you can ever take in your life.
Was it scary occasionally, or was it a reasonably safe donut shop or a reasonably safe neighborhood?
It was safe, but of course I was scared. I was young, and my first time working overnight from 11 to 7 in the morning. I had all these stereotypes about what happens at a donut shop overnight. So I still remember the anxiety that I was feeling then. But no, it was safe. And I think, in fact, that it helped me build a lot of my confidence.
We think about Black Lives Matter, as was Black History Month back in February. Would people see you as a minority and occasionally make comments about your name and things like that? Have you run into that kind of a bit of racism growing up in Canada?
Yes. The vast majority of people are respectful, kind, and generous. There are occasional situations where somebody makes fun of my name or makes assumptions about my background, makes assumptions about why I'm in politics and what my priorities are. Sure. Most of these people, by the way, tend to be very good people. Some of them are highly reputable people that I'm not going to name, but you wouldn't think they would say things like that. And I know most of the time it might be coming from a good place. They just, it's ignorance, it's lack of awareness. But yes, of course, I've experienced that.
No, I've ran into white privilege. I have it. And I don't have never ran into someone saying anything negative about me or my name. So it's something, a very different lived experience for myself. Hopefully, I think we're getting better.
We are absolutely getting better. And I have a privilege too, right? I have a great job today. I have a high profile with a platform. And that's why I try my best to utilize this platform to share my experience with others, because I know there are millions of others who don't have the platform that I have, but may have had a similar experience and hope to have their voice and their perspective shared in the public discourse that takes place today.
We're speaking with Canada's Minister of Transport, Omar Al-Ghabra. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
I worked for IBM for about 11 years. Back in that day, politics was kind of a dirty word. You know, it meant you got treated badly by someone. But politics is a very good thing. And you're a politician, rightly so, proud of it in the best sense. What is good about politics? Why is politics something good for Canada?
This is such a good question that I spent a lot of time thinking about. You're right. Politics has a negative connotation. And I actually tell my lawyer friends, thank God for lawyers, because they have they have sometimes more stereotypes than politicians. Sorry to all my lawyer friends who are listening. But yes, and it's unfortunate and that stereotype exists. And for many times, it's for good reasons, because people can point to anecdotally examples of people abusing their position in power or, trading on misinformation, etc., and it frustrates people. But the business of politics is an incredibly important aspect and the craft of politics. And by the way, I tell people, we all practice politics. We all practice politics at university. We practice politics at home. We practice politics at work. It's how to deal with our colleagues, how to deal with our, with our partners, how to deal with our kids, how to deal with our customers. There's politics there involved, but certainly the politics you're referring to is a much broader public office type of politics. And in Canada, I'm proud to be part of a system that ensures public representation, that individuals who are elected are held accountable by their electors, and that they have the mandate to represent the interest of their constituents. And as imperfect as politics is, it is the best way for people to ensure that the people who represent them are fighting for their interest. And sometimes, by the way, interests don't align with sentiment. Mm. Sometimes sentiments are short-term passionate feelings that are based on perhaps lack of full picture information. And the job of an elected official is to be aware of the sentiment, but to continue to advocate for interests. And sometimes, because of that, what may seem like a contradiction between the interests and the sentiment, there might be some frustration, like right now with COVID-19. When do we put on public health measures? When should we lift public health measures? There's a degree of frustration on either side of the debate, understandably so. But as an elected official, as someone who holds an office bigger than I am, I have a responsibility to Canadians to do what I feel is the best thing to do for them. And I'm proud to be in politics. I'm proud to be an elected official in a country that really holds politicians accountable, has a high standard of ethics and conduct. And yes, there are some, nasty aspects to it where it gets really hyper-partisan or personal, and it's regrettable, but it is an important vehicle for social change, for public advocacy, and for improving and progressing our country.
Why a liberal? Why are you a liberal as opposed to anything else? What attracted you to the party?
I'm a person who have been interested in public policy for during my young years in university, but I was never interested in partisan politics. And when I was in university, I was not a partisan. And in fact, I was more sympathetic sometimes. We had Mike Harris at that time, and I was sympathetic to some of the arguments that he was making. But I learned over the years that you need the combination of the role of government, but also the protection of civil liberty. And it is, I feel, what a liberal party stands for. It stands for individual liberty, but also the important role of government in society. No party is perfect, but the values of the Liberal Party that combines the role of government and the role of the private sector, the role of individual, is what attracts me to the Liberal Party.
Mr. Minister, what brings you to Montreal today?
Today I came to make a really exciting announcement. For years, the people of Montreal, the people of Quebec, the people of Ontario have been asking for the creation of a high-frequency rail that connects the city of Quebec to Montreal, to Ottawa, through Trois-Rivières to Toronto. And today I came to make an announcement that we're moving on with that project. We are launching, we're opening up now to the private sector, asking for expressions of interest for any company or consortiums who have ideas, expertise, know-how, to submit an application, to submit a expression of interest, so we can start identifying potential partners who we can work with them on to build this really, really important project. This will be the largest infrastructure project in Canada's history.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar El-Gabra, Canada's Minister of Transport, who happens to be in Montreal today. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CO series. Next up, we'll dive deeper into the high frequency train coming that will go between Montreal, Toronto, Quebec City, and other parts of Canada.
Top notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar El-Gabra, Canada's Minister of Transport, who happens to be in Montreal today. The high frequency train coming that will go between Montreal, Toronto, Quebec City. Do you have a sense of how much it might cost? Early thought at this moment?
I have a sense, but what I also learned is that my assessment changes because first, not only costs change, so I'm not hedging on that only, but there are still unanswered variables that we need to answer with our partner. So the speed of the train, for example, the curvature of the track, the length of the train, the frequency. We set a minimum standard service, but we're hoping to exceed those. And those variables remain unanswered, and we want to answer them with the private sector partner. So I can tell you it's going to cost billions of dollars, but I'm not able to give you even a rough estimate yet because some unanswered questions need to be answered first.
So I took the train last week to Toronto and back, mm-hmm. So it's a very personal thing. So it's more frequency as opposed to much higher speed or things like that. It's going to be focusing on having many more trains as opposed to once three times the speed.
Well, it's actually all of the above. First, okay. It's more frequency. Second, it's dedicated track. Right now, VIA uses a track shared by freight rail companies. And therefore, they always have to wait for a freight train to pass by, causing additional delay. So that's also a good thing. Third, yes, we are looking at faster speed. I don't know how fast we can go, but I know we can go faster than the traditional speed. And that is the type of stuff that we are seeking help from partners on. But I'm hoping that not only the frequency, not only the tracks, but also the speed will be faster.
I was in France recently, a couple years ago now, come to think of it. It was over 300 kilometers an hour, so it lit up and announced to the passengers we're going that fast. So love the frequency and the speed and all those things. Hope good luck with that and look forward to riding it someday. With the pandemic and the war in the Ukraine, supply chains are front and center. What's your view of what Canada should do about supply chains?
So our supply chains have been stressed for sure because of the pandemic, and we are seeing that globally. We're seeing that happen in the US. We're seeing that happen in Europe. You talk to people ordering couches and appliances all over the world. We're seeing inflation, which is also a result of the stress of supply chains. We're seeing labor shortages as well that are been not only not necessarily caused by the pandemic, but certainly exacerbated by the pandemic. And now the addition of the disturbance and hostility in Europe. So yes, there are global issues, but we in Canada can do things that focus on our domestic supply chain. And also we're working with our allies, with the US, on coordinating our efforts. So in Canada, for example, and let me just say, we've been doing some work on the supply chain for a while. So we've been putting investments in infrastructure for our supply chain under the National Trade Corridor Fund that had $4 billion of dedicated in it. Second, we've been working with through regulation on enhancing transparency with our rail companies to ensure that we have higher transparency, more measurements on their performances to be present and measurable. Third, we're working on labor shortage through my colleague, Minister Qualtro, the Minister of Employment. We've now dedicated a significant amount of investment to work with provinces, but also the private sector on identifying key skills that we need to attract, either through immigration or through enhancement of skills of existing workforce here in Canada. So all of that work has been ongoing for a while. And what we're doing now is we're going to identify additional areas of work. For example, data and data transparency and data utility. There's more, I think, that we can do on that. So we've recently funded a project with the Port of Vancouver on providing more dashboards and data mining of data that exists and how we can benefit from the data that we have to turn it into information, to turn it into better management and greater efficiency of vessel traffic along the port. We're also looking for, minor or larger infrastructure projects that perhaps for a while have been holding back on, but now is the time because of climate change, that's also an added layer that's causing stress on our supply chain. So yeah, that's also, we're looking at stuff or additional investment. And I've just announced a few weeks ago now, the creation of a task force made up of private sector experts to help provide additional advice to government on what else can we do to strengthen our supply chains.
We're speaking with Canada's Minister of Transport, Omar Al-Ghabra. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
A big industry in Canada is the cruise ship industry, which has been very hard hit, to say the least, during the pandemic. How and when do you see it might be coming back?
Oh, first of all, you're right. The cruise industry is incredibly important for a certain number of communities in Canada, either on the East Coast or here in Montreal or on the West Coast, in Quebec as well. And to answer directly your question, I'm really excited to say that they're going to start this April. So after a two-year absence of the industry, the industry now is preparing itself to receive the first cruise ships this spring. We've set up certain public health measures requirements. So we're requiring passengers to be vaccinated, crews to be vaccinated, reporting and testing by the cruise ship industry is required. And this is important not only to protect everyone, but also to regain confidence in the system. And a lot of Canadians who are thinking about it, but remembering of what had happened at the beginning of the pandemic, can use some additional reassurance that the industry is safe. And we want to do everything we can to welcome the industry back, to support it, and to ensure that it remains safe.
Tell us about your first year as transport minister. What surprised you, and what were your three key takeaways?
I can certainly try. I always knew that transport was critical to our economy. I had little knowledge of the depth and the breadth that transport was involved in throughout our economy. And certainly because of COVID, added an additional layer that exposed the important role that transport plays in the economy. So whether it is COVID, whether it is security, I mean, transport, ultimately, my number one priority is safety. And COVID obviously complicated that. So whether it's COVID, protections against COVID, whether it's security, whether it's jobs and employment, whether it's supply chains, whether it is international trade, it's all the intersection there is all through transport. And I certainly learned that on the job. As much as I thought I knew about transport, I didn't have a full sense of how broad and deep it went. Again, how vital transport is for our economy. And, you know, when you go, for example, I'm going to go to the West Coast. When you hear that 40% of our trade comes through the Pacific Gateway, that's a significant piece of data that brings it home. Yeah. How important that is. When we had the blockade at the Ambassador Bridge in Windsor, and you discovered that $400 million a day of merchandise trade crosses that bridge on a daily basis. With when you combine it with the additional blockades, $500 million a day. That certainly brought it home to me, and I think to the majority of Canadians, how significant these trade corridors are. And look, lastly, I'll say, before entering politics, I thought I knew the answer to everything. I thought government was always slow in reacting and most of the time made the wrong decision because it didn't coincide or it did not harmonize with what I thought the right answer was. But then when I entered politics, and particularly now as a minister, you get exposed to the full picture. You get to see some of the other angles that you as an individual had not thought of or not seen because you only know what you know from your daily life. And it really humbled me is that how complicated governance is. And no matter how committed you are to the right approach or the right answer, but if you don't bring stakeholders and Canadians along with you, you're not doing yourself any good. So the idea of also bringing leadership that brings Canadians along, it also became very clear to me during my role as a minister.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar El Gabra, Canada's Minister of Transport. I'm Carl Moore, and you're listening to the CO Series. Next up, we'll talk about lessons Omar has learned about leadership over the years in his political life and being in the cabinet as well.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar El Gabra, Canada's Minister of Transport, who happens to be in Montreal today. I've taught an advanced leadership program with senior bureaucrats, and it struck me the minister is the politician, a very important person, but the deputy ministers, the ADMs, those people are enormously knowledgeable of their areas. Is that one of the things that struck you as well, that these people actually really do know what they're talking about a lot?
Oh, absolutely. And that I got exposed to that prior to my job as a minister of transport when I became the parliamentary secretary to the prime minister for public service renewal. And I worked with the public service on many aspects, from renewing how public service does its job. And then I witnessed it during COVID. And the amount of commitment and knowledge and professionalism that our public service has is impressive, is as equivalent, if not beyond, the private sector, to be honest. I know we often say, governments that can't do things right. It is not true. Yes, mistakes happen, but mistakes happen in the private sector too. It's just they don't get as much attention as the mistakes that happen in government. But the professionalism, the dedication, the knowledge, the skills, the sense of pride, the knowledge that they are doing it for public good is present and evident in every public servant I've interacted with. The sense of pride that they have, but also how seriously they take their job. So I'm incredibly grateful to public service, to those who work in transport, to those who work in other departments. During COVID and to this now, sometimes they haven't had a weekend off. And again, it goes against the intuition that government workers leave at 4 p.m. And that's not what I saw. That is not what I saw. I saw a public service that is committed to doing the right thing as quickly as possible, as productively as possible, and to do it the right way. And they've been working day and night on weekends during a very unprecedented time. So I'm really grateful to all of them.
I have the opportunity to teach undergraduates, so Canada's future. What are the big issues that my undergraduates should be thinking about in your mind? What are the things that 20-year-olds should be going, when I'm 50, when I'm 60, this should be in much better shape than it is today?
I don't know if I can do that, but the one thing I can say to students right now, I knew when I was a student, I remember I didn't know what job I should go. I didn't even know what degree I should pursue. You know, people told me, adults told me, you should know what you want to become when you graduate. And I felt incompetent because I didn't know. So I first want to say that it's normal. I've discovered over the years that I'm not the only one. Yes, there are many students who know exactly what they want, and good for them. But there are many of us who didn't know what we wanted to do. So what I would advise people is pursue what you're really passionate about, what you really love. Because when you do what you really love, you'll be good at it. And when you're good at it, you'll succeed. And employers, whether they're in the private sector or the public sector, will pursue you because you have the knowledge, the passion, and the love for your profession. So, and the other thing I would say, don't assume the decisions you make today are final. That's one thing that stressed me out. I'm like, if I study mechanical engineering, it's going to commit me to the rest of my life. And what if I don't like it? No, I stand before you as an example of somebody who, you know, found different exit ramp and changed career. And that will happen to those who want to pursue different opportunities. So just because you're worried that this might commit you the rest of your life, therefore, let it paralyze you, don't. Do what you like now. If it changes or if another opportunity surfaces that you really like, you're going to be able to take advantage of it and pursue it. And whatever you've done now, as long as you've done it with passion and commitment, will not hold you back. In fact, it will prepare you for it.
We're speaking with Omar Algebra, Canada's Minister of Transport. One of the things in leadership we talk about is authentic leadership a lot. What is authentic leadership in your mind? And Omar, I presume you try to be an authentic leader. What does that mean?
I think people need to see, whether it is a politician or a business leader, people need to see that the vision that you're espousing, the policies you're advocating for, the decisions that you're making, you are making those decisions with convictions, with principles behind it, the ability to explain those principles, and the fact that, you know, that you can adjust if you learn more information that leads you to changing your opinion, but at least that you're able to explain why you're making this decision and what is the purpose of that decision. People are forgiving when new information comes to light and you change your mind. But people don't have a lot of tolerance for people that don't, leaders who don't know why they're doing what they're doing. So I think that's one way of defining authenticity, is knowing who you are, what you're advocating for, and why.
I just finished a book on Generation Z and millennials. Do you see millennials and Generation Z kind of changing the government and politics? Are they fairly similar to the Xers and Yers in your view?
As an Xer, I think they are changing the landscape, not only for politics, but for our economy. Certainly, I think the way we communicate, the way we connect with each other, whether it's social media or any other channels, have changed our habits, have changed our way of doing things, and our way of expressing ourselves. I'm not in this school of thought that says that's a bad thing. I don't think it is. It's just a different way of doing things. But it certainly is different. And I think, you know, the next generation is going to really have a maybe be smarter than us in how we expressing ourselves and making decisions on policies.
So you get to sit in the cabinet with the prime minister and don't want any criticisms. That's not appropriate. But take us inside the cabinet. How does the prime minister lead? And as a senior minister, how do you bring issues to the cabinet and how does it work?
First of all, I still pinch myself every day I'm inside that cabinet room, whether virtually or physically, because a lot of times we did the cabinet virtually. Second, it has given me an incredible window to how the prime minister operates. And I've seen him firsthand deal with very complicated issues with determination, with clarity, and with humility. And he's always been engaged. I know, you know, much of the public only see him when he's making announcements. They don't see him interacting back and forth with other cabinet ministers and other public servants. He is highly engaging in asking intelligent questions, holding us all accountable, keeping us focused on what is expected of us and what the public expects of us. And it's been really a privilege to be exposed to that. As the rest of us, our cabinet colleagues and the prime minister, we often engage in a very frank, honest, blunt conversation and debates, and we don't always agree on everything. We come out in at least understanding of the position that we all have to agree to. But we always, sometimes, depending on the topic, more vigorous than others, we have really healthy and blunt conversations and exchange of ideas and criticism on a regular basis, and which makes me proud.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Canada's Minister of Transport, Omar Al-Ghubra. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll talk about whether Omar is an introvert or an extrovert and some findings we've had on the interview.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm delighted to be speaking with Omar Al-Ghubra, Canada's Minister of Transport, who happens to be in Montreal today. I'm doing a book on introverts, extroverts, and ambiverts. Do you think you're a bit more introverted or extroverted?
I'm more introverted.
But you're a minister, you got to work the room at times, and you're a politician. You kiss babies once in a while. You have to act like an extrovert, don't you?
Look, my mom a few years ago told me, you are the last person of my kids I would have thought that you would gotten into politics, because I was always a shy kid. Yeah. I still am an introvert. I think over the years I've developed more confidence and recognition of how important the job is, but it's also exhausting sometimes, you know. So I love my time and my downtime where I sit at home, watch Netflix or listen to a podcast or play a game on my phone, where it allows me the ability to just unwind and release some of that energy.
A lot of people from the country get to Ottawa for trips. What's your favorite restaurant in Ottawa?
There's a place. So the challenge for us in Ottawa, particularly during COVID, is that most restaurants close early. And I'm usually not able to have dinner until 9 p.m. So one of the restaurants I go to, and again, with all due respect to other restaurants that I've been to, is Ottawa Kebab. It's a fantastic restaurant, Middle Eastern food. They're open late, so I'm able to go there and order my food and enjoy it.
Well, someone who grew up in Saudi Arabia probably knows kebabs.
Yes. As a Syrian, I can tell you I know kebabs, and this is one. And it's run by Syrians, by the way. Not. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm endorsing. You asked me for my favorite.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we're looking for. If you were not a politician, what do you think you'd be doing now?
Well, I know what I was doing before becoming a politician. I was working in the energy sector. By the way, my last job was with General Electric. I was a business manager there in one of their departments. And at that time, I thought that was going to be my career. I thought it was the corporate world was going to be my life, and I was having fun doing it. So I think I may have stayed in the corporate world.
We're speaking with Omar Al-Ghabra, Canada's Minister of Transport. Unfortunately, we ran out of time with Omar, but wanted to take a moment to reflect on some of the more important thoughts from today's show. With me today is my producer, Youssef, who's a 22-year-old final year student at McGill University who worked as a consultant last summer and is going back to the consulting industry when he graduates. Youssef, from your perspective as a young person, what really stood out for you in this show?
Yeah, thanks so much, Carl, for having me on today. Really happy to be here. Yeah, I found it extremely interesting to hear about Omar's journey to Canada as an immigrant. As the child of immigrant parents myself, I just found it really inspiring to hear about how, you know, he's encountered a lot of adversity in his path, you know, racism at different points and people not accepting him for who he is at different points. And just battling through that to end up in a lot of really cool jobs and as our Minister of Transport today. So that was one piece that I found, you know, very inspiring to listen to, especially as a young person and as a child of immigrant parents. On the second point, something that I found extremely interesting was actually how he described his career path and the non-linearity of a career path, which, you know, it can be very intimidating as a young person to think, oh, where am I going to be in 5-10 years? What job am I going to have? And so when he was talking about how he had initially worked at a donut shop and this was the best place for him to learn politics, and then he went to General Electric where he thought, you know, he might have been there his whole life, and then suddenly, boom, he's in politics and has, you know, advanced up to being the Minister of Transport for the Prime Minister. So that was super interesting to me. It made me feel a lot better about the uncertainty one has about their career, and lets you know that just, you know, working hard in whatever you do will get you where you want to be. So in that sense, that was a really cool takeaway that I took from the interview.
Are you excited about the train between Toronto and Montreal? Is it something that appeals to you?
Yeah, so listen, like, I'll be someone who's working in Toronto after school, and Montreal is a city that I've lived in for the last 4 years while I've been at McGill. So I'm really excited about the prospect of being able to come here very quickly or very frequently. I thought it was particularly interesting when Omar was talking about these high-speed trains, similar to the ones, you know, in Asia. You know, the idea of being able to just take a night or a day trip to Montreal very fast in the future is one that's super appealing to me. And I think it'd be super appealing to many across Canada. So in that sense, I'm really excited about the announcement, and I hope that it comes to fruition as fast as it can.
What do you personally want, Youssef, to see in the future of transport?
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to what I really want to see when it comes to the future of transportation, I think it's centered around three things: sustainability, accessibility, and just crazy innovation. So just to jump into those things, when it comes to sustainability, I think on more of an individual level, the idea of there being electric cars, electric vehicles that are more widespread, and other sustainable energy sources across Canada. I know Montreal and Quebec have been, you know, implementing these EV incentive programs for people to buy cheaper electric vehicles, and have been working really hard to build more accessible train charging stations. And in that sense, I think it's really positive for the future. You know, those in my generation are really concerned about what the environment and climate will look like going forward. So at least from that perspective, I really hope to see a stronger push towards sustainability-driven transportation going forward. On my second point about accessibility, I know that transportation systems around Canada have seen issues when it comes to accessibility, whether that's in a train station or a metro station or on the bus, specifically when it comes to those who may be disabled or in wheelchairs or might have a stroller with them. So going forward, especially as this new form of transportation with the trains comes to fruition, I'd really like to see a focus around accessibility and equity, both in stations, both in cost. Is this going to be something that really wealthy people are only able to take, or, you know, this is a new form of business travel? That's not what we want. We want to see a more equitable and accessible form of technology. So in that sense, I'm really excited to see how accessibility pans out there. Now, my third point, really crazy innovation. I mentioned this earlier, but the idea of really fast trains and the idea of, you know, like a 30-minute trip between Toronto and Montreal just really, really excites me. So You know, our world is pretty connected through the internet and so on, but having the ability to travel somewhere so quickly, a whole different metropolitan city, and given the extensive and rich culture in Montreal and Quebec, almost like a whole different world compared to Toronto, that is so exciting to me, and it's something that I really hope to see come to fruition in future years. So in that sense, just to sum it up, a lot of work done around sustainability, accessibility, and just making sure that this really crazy innovation comes to fruition are the things that I want to see in the future of transportation.
What do you think young people like yourself can take away from today's show?
Yeah, so a few key takeaways, I think, for younger people in general are just a number of things that Omar mentioned. The first is the value of just working really hard for what you want. As I mentioned earlier, I found it really inspiring to hear about Omar's story, how he progressed through a number of different roles and always tried to stay true to his beliefs and join organizations that reflected those beliefs. I thought that was really just inspiring to hear about. So in that sense, just working hard and staying true to yourself. And that kind of feeds into the second point, and that was when Omar was talking about the authenticity of leadership. So I think it's really important that those of us who enter future leadership roles know the importance of staying authentic, staying true, and ensuring that you lead in the best and most authentic way you can. That was also really interesting to hear. And lastly, I want to talk about just always being open to different kinds of opportunities. As I mentioned earlier, the non-linearity of the career path was something that I really personally took away from the show. And I think it's important for those my age to think about how, you know, taking one opportunity might snowball into another, and how it's important to just always keep yourself open to going with the flow.
This is the CO Series. We'd like to thank Omar for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna, and our show producer, Youssef Sahoni. Thank you for tuning into the CO Series. À la prochaine.